We are joined here with Greg Robertson from Duluth, Minnesota. Greg is a local runner who's been at it for a long time. And Greg, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, certainly. Happy to be here.
So first thing we want to talk about is something that is a little bit more immediate is you were down in Atlanta at the Olympic trials just last weekend. Tell us about that.
As you can expect, an amazing experience to be part of, to be there live. I had a opportunity with some runners out of St. Paul who I used to run with quite a bit and I've competed against for years. And I was at lunch and just said, "Hey, who wants to go see the trials?" And they had already had it set up.
Wow.
So they had a VRBO set up and they're like, "Hey, you're more than welcome to join us. We have another bed." So
nice.
Sitting at work, get on the phone and try to find a Delta flight and managed to do that pretty quickly and set it up. So that was how I got there, Friday through Sunday. So a very quick trip. Friday was just milling around. I got down there really early. And so I don't know if you've talked about the locals who were in the trials or not.
We mentioned it a little bit.
Yeah, so Matt Welch,
Harry,
Proctor grad, and he was down there. So that was one of the main reasons I wanted to go down and see him. So I found him on Friday.
Yeah.
Went, and he was, of course, staying at the host hotel. And so that was pretty cool, a little starstruck. So
yeah.
I saw tons of coaches who I've read about and, you know, Instagram, social media, runners that I've only seen on social media. Of course, got in touch with Matt. We just sat around and it was pretty neat to see everybody milling around and the excitement. You could just feel the intensity of just people walking around and smiling. And Jim Walmsley walks by and looks at Matt and just says, "Hey, Matt." No, "Hey, Jim." So, you know, he's first name basis with Jim Walmsley. So
Wow. That
was kind of cool. And
no way.
I saw Jenny Behringer Simpson just walking around. I think her husband was running. I'm not certain.
Okay.
Otherwise, she was just in town.
Yeah, I think he was.
Who else did I see at the host hotel? But just, yeah, that was kind of cool to see. Anybody that's been to a high-level track meet or road race, you get to see a handful or maybe even just one, but it just seemed like every turn of your neck, you were seeing a coach or a runner that you've seen on TV or on the cover of Running World or Running Times.
This just milling about, or was
just,
this like
just milling? Just people were going out for shakeout runs. People were going, you know, probably trying to find dinner. Matt was actually headed for like a midday meeting with his coach and the group that he trains with, just to touch base and make sure everybody was eating and drinking. So I went and had a chance to go meet him, James McCurdy, with the McCurdy Group out of Flagstaff, which was a I really wanted to meet him and didn't have a lot of time to talk to him, but at least touch base with him. So that was kind of neat. That was the day before. And of course, it was the Omni Hotel, and it was right across from the Olympic Centennial Park.
Yep.
And got not a lot. It was closed off pretty well to the public, so the runners could get in there, but you couldn't get in. It was barricaded, so that was kind of neat to see. They lit the torch for the first time since 1996, the morning of the marathon.
Uh-huh.
So that was neat to see. And the Olympic rings were still up in the park. And so the race itself, our VRBO was about a mile and a half, 2 miles out. So we just jogged in.
Mm-hmm.
And if you took a look at the map of the course, it did like a loop right around Olympic Stadium, you know, I'm talking a couple mile loop, you know, and then a north-south out and back on Peachtree, the famous Peachtree, what is it, street or avenue, but, and so we kind of set ourselves on that lower part of that out and back, that north and south out and back, and then where the bottom loop was, so we could see that, we saw the runners about six different times.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's see, did the women go out first? It's only been a week and I can't remember.
I think the men did.
I think
the men
went
out first, that's correct. And so then we watched them, then we watched the women head out. And
start
then
of it.
Yeah, right down at the start. Yeah.
Right.
And then we went up north to that out and back loop and it was just, there. The men were on one side and a couple minutes later the women would be on the other coming in. And so you just got plenty of chances to see the race develop. And the last back that the men came through, then we actually had to hustle to get to the finish area. And I say area meaning thousands. I mean, picture the Canal Park Drive on a beautiful, sunny Grandma's Marathon weekend where a lot of spectators were out there. And now multiply that out, you know, thousands more runners. And probably I was at the 200 meter to go mark, and that's as close as I could get to the finish line. Mm-hmm. And from that point up the course, more, you know, probably another quarter of a mile, it was, you know, five people deep, both sides of the street, just screaming. Yeah. So that's as close as I could get to the finish, which was kind of actually ended up being a really good place to be.
Yeah.
They did a kind of a lonely solo loop to make up that last, what, two and a half miles.
Right.
And when they came around by to go to the finish, then it was up a hill like a grinder. So where I saw them with 200 to go, it was kind of the flat part of the hill where they're just kind of plateauing before then they downhill bombed into that central that park area.
Yeah.
And so there you could just see people wasted coming up over trying to catch a breath, now going, oh, now I got to go downhill and sprint with 200 to go. And that is where Jake Riley and Abdi and Lenny Carrier were all almost shoulder and shoulder. Lenny was about two steps back.
Wow.
But at that point with 200 to go, I didn't know who was making the team. Or I should say who wasn't going to make the team.
Right. Which one
That excitement. It was I got some pictures. I put some pictures up on social media and that was pretty cool to see.
That's sweet. I heard they estimate around 200,000 people watching. Spectators,
I would say safely. Yeah, you know, that's so shout cool. out to anybody that knows of the Atlanta Track Club. They put that on. They had the responsibility of hosting and organizing the Olympic marathon trials for near 700 runners, men and women.
Right.
You know, all 700 were treated as elites. They all had their own individual water bottles at all of the tables. And I've only read positive comments, which doesn't come to a surprise. That club is amazing.
Yeah, and that's what I heard too. I know that was a big talk. How are they going to get water bottles to all these people, especially the first couple when people are not thinned out just yet? And I didn't hear anything bad about the whole process. It sounded like it went really well.
Certainly. And I know I follow several, if you want to say B tier runners, but you know, they're obviously elites, but they knew they weren't going to make the Olympic team. They were there for that experience. And they themselves said, you know, where I was running, I had never missed a bottle.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Wow. So it's not like aid stations have water and blue Gatorade. And,
yeah, right.
and a generic gel of some type.
Right. A little card table and some Dixie cups.
Like they had their own custom.
Yeah. All dolled up with their little straws and their glitter or whatever it was to make. And they were in the same spot. So if you were runner 75, your bottle was on table 4 in position 3. And crazy. So, you know, every single
every
table,
time it would be
every
table
single
4.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was quite a thing to see and put that on.
They had different colors for the tables too. I saw red, white, and blue, and I think the women's were red, if I remember right. The men's were blue, and then white, they had just literally cups of water, I think, on the white tables. So that helped too. So if you're running along, you just ignore, if you're looking for a blue table, you just ignore the other two.
And,
I saw a little interview with that. So.
Yeah. So was it pretty easy to kind of track the progress of the race and like where the main pack was and the chase pack and things like that? Like seeing, you know, the athletes six different times essentially.
It actually almost got a little dizzy. You know, you're looking on both sides of the street because at mid race, the women and men are almost crisscrossing at the same point on that out and back. And I had received a text message from a buddy saying, why did Luke Pescadra go out and, you know, why is he out front?
Yeah.
He never was out front where I was.
Oh,
so
really?
It happened quick. Yeah. I think it happened right away.
It did. He was the first one to break.
Where we went, the guy that ran to like 14 before he got caught.
Schrader. Yeah.
Uh-huh. He was already out front when he went by us the first time. Okay. So those type of developments that happen. And if we would have been in the right spot where Galen took off at 14-ish.
Yeah.
You could see that develop, but it had already taken place. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the downside of being at a live event marathon. You know, we were fortunate to see them as many times as we did, but still saying the downside is you don't get to see a televised event where the breaks are.
And sometimes you miss it on TV too, which is unfortunate, whether it's a commercial break or the press conference interrupted this year.
Yeah. The president.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they're focused, like there'll be a break on the women's race, but they're focused on a story on one of the men's race or on a story or something like that, and then they miss the break. So you kind of miss it on TV too at times. But yeah, live, I would think it's even more crap.
Plus, you don't have the data. I mean, that's the cool part about the TV broadcast was that there's all the data, you know, 2 seconds behind, it's 35 seconds behind.
I had that tracker going with a few runners, but it was almost a nuisance because you didn't want to be staring at your phone and then, you know, the lead pack go by and you go, who was that? I didn't really pay attention to, I only had a half a dozen runners on the tracker, and I honestly didn't look at it until the end, and I looked at their splits.
Yeah.
And that's where I saw where the break was.
Yep.
And it was for the women, it was even more of a surprise because, like I said, we waited for the men to come past us on their last return, whereas the lead women were still on their way out.
Sure.
We left, and so they were still in the pack the last I saw them.
Yeah, they ran.
And so when they came around that, when I was at that 200 to go, I didn't know who was leading. And then I saw it was Alphine, so then I'm thinking, well, who's second, third? You know, where's Desi? Where's Emma Bates? Where's these runners I thought might have a shot? I didn't know Sarah Hall dropped out and Emily Sisson and some others. So it was really, I thought it was exciting to be there going, okay, who's coming around the corner next? And who's coming around the corner next? And to see, you know, see how close Desi was and digging hard in chase for that third spot.
Cool. Yeah, that's super cool.
What about after the race then? I mean, it sounds like you stuck around for Sunday, right? Or, I mean, even just later on that Saturday, were there still athletes milling about? Did they all kind of just go back to their hotel rooms and take cold showers?
I found that surprising, but then when you think about it, not too surprising. I didn't see very many people. They kind of stick to their own groups. Mm-hmm. So like the Northern Arizona, the elite group, the Hoka group, had a place where they were going to go hang out.
Yeah.
And the Brooks Club had a place where they were going to go hang out with Hansons and such.
Yeah.
So I didn't run into anybody that evening.
Yeah.
We went to a couple places and ended up seeing some of the Minnesota Distance Elite coaching staff, supporters, not many athletes.
Okay.
I went and hunted down Matt again just to say hi and you know, congratulations. But he was just milling in just chilling out in his motel room. So
cool.
What did he have to say about the race? Did you pick his brain that night?
Little bit. You know, I think the consensus from everybody was it was extremely hard. The hills. You just kept hearing that over and over and over. Mm-hmm. The hills, the hills, the hills. And it was. I'm trying to think of something that we can relate to here in Duluth. Maybe not a lemon drop type hill, but drop the grade of that down a smidge. Yeah. And there were plenty of those just repeat constantly over and over.
Yeah.
A long grade, that Outback Peachtree, that's a long, long, mile and a half type grade where it just gradually goes up and then returns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what you may or may not have noticed on the telecast was the degree of the wind.
Yeah, that's what they were saying.
Unbelievable. So those times, those 209s, those 210s, those women, 227.
Yeah.
What did Alphine run?
Six.
226.
I think 226. Yeah.
226, 228, 229. That is just amazing with that wind.
Yeah.
And it being the design of the course, there was very little protection.
Yeah,
you know, they were getting it from all angles. So, it was great to see anybody run that fast, but then just anybody finishing strong. And if you were out by yourself, I think you paid the price.
Yeah. I was really surprised with there was the two big breaks from the guys, Schrader especially, because it went so long, and then a couple of guys went with him. Albertson is one, and I forget the name of the other guy who had gone, I think, either with Schrader or Piscedra. That was shocking to me to see those, because the women, they just stayed packed up, mm-hmm. as you saw. Like,
yeah, they ran a much smarter race as a group.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm looking up some information here. So the course elevation gain for the trials course was 1,389 feet.
Now, is that per lap?
I think that's total.
Okay.
I think that's total. And then, for instance, for Grandma's Marathon, for... I have to do more research here, but I want to find that comparison.
Yeah.
That gain must be, what, like 50 feet, if that?
Yeah. I don't think it's very much what's Lemon Drop Hill, you know, 50 feet.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Anyway. What I failed to mention, and take it with a grain of salt or however you stand on the topic, I got to try on and jog in a pair of the Nike Alpha Fly shoes. Matt and I have the same size foot.
Oh, yeah.
And for those that don't know, Nike was there, and they gave any Olympic marathon qualifier a pair of the Alpha Fly shoes, regardless if they were sponsored or not. It was up to them if they wanted to take them or turn them down.
Yeah.
That was my understanding.
It was, yeah.
But the athletes that I know were not sponsored, and they did grab them. A few actually wore them. Matt did not. But I tried them on, and they're interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna go and spend whatever there are, $300 or $400.
I don't even know what the Alpha Flies cost. Yeah.
Rumor has it by Sunday morning there were Alpha Flies on eBay,
lightly used,
for $1,300.
Yeah. 26 miles only.
Yeah. So I think some people put them on and said not for me, but right. I think I can get rid of these things. No, again, that's I don't.
Do
know
you
if
think
you
there's
agree
fine print?
It.
You know, like don't sell them on eBay. You know,
I mean, it almost should be. Yeah. But yeah, so that was kind of an interesting thing. I didn't think I was going to get a chance to do, but
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't buy a pair, but would you run a marathon sight unseen if they were given to you?
Yeah, right. I don't know. I mean, honestly, I have a pair of the 4%s, and I have a pair of the Next percents, and I love them, and they feel good, and legs don't get the fatigue that I used to get in certain events. And, you know, my two cents is now everyone's catching up. Mm-hmm. Brooks Hyperion Elite has a carbon fiber plate. Saucony has a carbon fiber plate. Hoka has a carbon plate. Everyone's catching up. Everyone's going to have a carbon fiber plate in their racing shoes. Let's just move on and race now.
Yeah.
Times might be quicker and things are going to change in 2020, but for those runners in the 70s that ran 208 and the women that ran 220, good for you. You guys are way a step ahead, but now we got carbon fiber plates and they're not going away.
Well, I guess the fine line has to be something of like it doesn't return energy or whatever, right? I mean,
yeah, it, well, yeah,
that's that fine line.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But you're like a Nike runner,
you know.
Anyways,
yeah, for
right?
good or bad, my foot fits them, and it is what it is. I like Brooks. I currently have a pair of Brooks I just purchased, and you know, if the money's there, maybe I'll get a pair of the Hyperion Elites, give them a shot. But
yeah,
I got a good fleet of racing shoes. I'm not racing that much, so
yeah,
they'll last.
Maybe that's a good segue to kind of some of your running history, Greg. Unless you had any other questions.
No, I agree. That's a perfect segue. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about some of your running. Let's go back all the way back to when it began. Where did your running career begin? What age? Where were you at?
How'd you get into it?
You know, like probably a lot of runners, you get introduced to, quote, a race as a kid in maybe elementary or middle school PE class or a fun run somewhere. And we certainly had those. My high school did not have a formal cross country program, which is also what a lot of young kids start with.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you grow up, by the way?
I grew up in a small copper mining town of White Pine, Michigan. So it's 3 hours east of Duluth. right on the western end of Upper Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a small school. You know, we did not have cross country, but not too many of the schools had cross country in that area at that time. But I started with a simple track and field day, one track meet in sixth or fifth grade, and you went that day, and I think I would run the 200 meters and the 400 meters because I thought anything more than one lap was ridiculous.
Yeah.
High school, I ran track all 4 years. It was probably a godsend that our high school's football program got shut down my junior year.
Wow.
And it was 1 week before the schools started my junior year. And I was actually in the gym shooting buckets basketball. And I had a coach come up to me and he goes, "Robertson," he goes, "do you want to run cross country?" And I said, "What's cross country?" And he says, "Well, I don't know. I'll take a bunch of you to a golf course and you'll run around." And he was a football basketball coach.
Yeah, yeah.
And
what a pitch.
That was my pitch, introduction to cross country running. And of course I said, "Yeah, I'll give it a shot." I didn't understand it was 3 miles, so 3.1, 5K. Yeah. I had no idea that's what we were going to be running. So the first year, first season was an eye opener. Because it was a new program, we all ran JV races, which also probably was a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Got my butt handed to me, rigging pretty hard after 2 miles with the old side stitch and trying to make it up the hills of cross country running. And then going into my senior year, I was working on, this is kind of funny because I also high jumped and long jumped in high school. And even being fairly short, I had a pretty decent jump. And so I was more working on a jumping program the summer in between my junior and senior year. And I was trying to figure out how to get more vertical and how to jump farther and higher. And part of the program was I had to run hills twice a week. And it didn't say distance, but it'd say find a hill and go run it 10 or 15 times.
Yeah.
And so, but where my parents live a little rural and there were plenty of hills. So I would go run these hills and I'd kind of run them diagonally along the highway. And I'd just go up, down, turn around, come back. And I'd figure I could get three in per trip. So I'd do a couple trips and, get 12 hills in. And my first cross country race of my senior year, then I ended up running varsity. First, he told us we were running varsity like the day before the race. I'm like, you're crazy. He goes, "Well, you're a senior. You got to run varsity." All right. And I was a top 10 finisher and I had beat all these kids from the year before that were just smoking me in JV even. And so I kind of light kind of moment going, "Hey, maybe I got something going on here." And got better throughout the year and ended up doing pretty well my senior year cross country. Went to college and was not recruited. Just didn't have the exposure or the right races to be noticed. And so I chose not to run. And I actually met a varsity college, one of the varsity members at a frat party. Mm-hmm. And I was wearing my old Nike waffle racers.
Yeah.
And he tapped me on the foot because I was on the stairwell. And he goes, "Hey, do you run? And I says, "Yeah." He goes, "Did you run cross country in high school?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "What were your times?" And so I told him. And he says, "Well, geez, you'd be the third guy on the team right now." He's like, "You got to go talk to the coach."
Yeah.
So I went and talked to the coach. And by that time, the season was over. So then I went into my sophomore year. Then I started running. So I ran cross country and all through the rest of college. And
where was that at?
Lake Superior State University, which is in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. Uh-huh. So the ships that leave Duluth end up in Sault Ste. Marie going through the locks.
Yeah.
So that's, I thought that was kind of neat.
And did you like running, or is it just like, "Hey, I'm kind of good at it. I did this training," or were you more like,
"I've always
high jumps better"?
Sure. Yeah. No. Being younger, I was not I wasn't fond of the distances.
Mm-hmm.
I never ran a mile race or a 2 mile race in high school. I ran 800s, but because of I'm pretty sure it's like that in Minnesota, but I can only, you could only do four events.
Okay.
In track. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So I would do the high jump, the long jump, the open 800, and then I was on a relay team.
Okay.
And I could score for our team in all four events. Yeah. So they let me be.
Yeah.
Because I thought the mile and 2 mile people were crazy. But in hindsight, I probably should have been a miler because going forward as a master, when I turned 40 was my first official mile race. It was a road mile, but that was the first time I ever lined up and, on your mark, get set, go and run a mile.
Yeah.
And so I never ran a mile in college. I did longer stuff. I did the 5K on the track, 10K on the track, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Steeplechase, I tried the steeplechase.
Oh, nice. You ended up getting into cross and track in college.
Yep. So that worked. And then moving out of college, my first exposure to Minnesota running was in 1993. I ended up living for a brief time in Eagan. Mm-hmm. And for anybody that knows, the Twin Cities running and racing is every weekend. You can race whatever you want, 5K, 10K, half. There's so many choices. So that summer I raced quite heavily just because they were there. And then I ended up leaving the area, and shortly thereafter ended up in Duluth. And I've been on the Minnesota road racing scene since 93. Yeah. Had a little of a break, 95, I wasn't, but so the names that I know, I've been chasing since 93, 94, and it's pretty, that's part of my story. Is the people I've looked up to and the people that I've chased, the list has gotten shorter. People fall off as we get older, but I want to be one of those, one of those guys that just try to keep going throughout the age groups and
50s and
see how long you can go.
70s.
Yeah.
So lucky.
Yeah.
Knock on wood.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Who were some of the people that kind of inspired you then? Who were some of the mentors, high school, college days, Eagan, Twin Cities days?
In college, I actually had a chance to meet Billy Mills.
Yeah. Yep.
And his story is so just so convincing and just so pure. And when he traveled, he brought his little video of his 10,000 meters in Tokyo. And that last lap, man, if you can hold back a tear, you're stone cold, man.
Right.
And plus having him there narrating it and talking and.
Yeah,
he's got such a soft voice, and the way he was talking, and what I didn't realize up to that point was he wanted to quit the Olympic 10,000 meters. I think even before 3 miles.
Oh, really?
And he talks of how he just talked himself into going one more lap and one more lap. That's kind of his mantra, was just one more lap. Focus on one lap. Focus on one lap, and then as he drew closer to the finish, then I think he probably realized he's in the hunt here. But between the announcers going crazy on that last 100 meter stretch and him telling the story, it just, he is forever kind of my number one idol. If anyone was ever to see my email address or my handle on some of social media, the Gregor722, the 722 comes from his bib number. He was wearing bib number 722 in the 68 Olympics, 10,000 meters. So that's where that comes from.
Oh, that's cool.
But, Billy Mills for sure. And then, I've had others throughout that more local, men and women too. Minnesota is so rich in running history, and it really is an amazing state. Of talent throughout the years. Looking back to even, this isn't really all that far back, but the Kleckers, you got Barney and his wife.
Janice.
Amazing runners, and their kids are as well. But guys that I more directly chasing, you've got Alex Rattel, who, he went through all the age group ranks. Who else? Wanda Gao, I think she's still racing well. She's going through all the age groups. She's always up towards the top. Doug Keller. I think he's in the 60-year-old, 60, 65, who's still running amazing times. Pat Billig, and the list goes on, really. And, you know, those are the people who kind of keep me getting out of bed in the morning and going out for that 5-mile run or doing that tempo run, because you know they are.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you exactly know. Yeah, for sure. Let's talk a little bit about that, the Minnesota Runner of the Year and that kind of thing, with some of the local people who get out and compete, you know, age group by age group, decade after decade after decade. You yourself, Greg, have been, at least as far as I know, a 3-time winner of that in different years, 2006 in the 35 to 39 age group, 2010 in the 40 to 44-year-old age group, and then 2016 in the 45 to 49. So in the last 10 years, you've got some of those awards. Talk a little bit about the Minnesota Runner of the Year, how that works. And I think a lot of people that are listening aren't really aware of that whole deal. And I think it's kind of cool. You mentioned guys like names like Alex Rattel. And if you go on the Minnesota Runner of the Year, it's MNROY.com. You go on that website and you look. I mean, some of those names are, and the times that those people run are unbelievable. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, certainly. It kind of is a small group that pay attention to this and that actually know it exists. I find the link off of raceberryjam.com. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So it's an old site, that one of the first websites that races schedules were listed on, and then you would quickly log on and try to find race results.
Mm-hmm. And that website looks exactly the same.
Yeah, man. It's changed. Let's keep it that way. It's old school.
It's so old school.
You know, Mike Setter, he is responsible for a lot of the you know, the Roy or Runner of the Year, keeping track of that, and he's on that site as well. But it's age grouped. There's an open age group, and the open carries you all the way up to 34.
Yeah, I believe so.
So 34 or 35.
I think it's 34. I think it's a 35 to 39. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So open age is teens up to 34, and the USATF, so the United States Track and Field Federation, Minnesota, sets up 6 or 8 races throughout the calendar. So they start usually in March with an 8K, and it usually finishes the Twin Cities Marathon weekend, I think, or possibly one more beyond that. And so you have races of various distances. You have 1 mile road race. You have the 5Ks, the 8Ks, 10Ks, half marathon, 10 mile half marathon, 25K, and marathon distances. And the races have to be certified. USATF certified, so the distance is accurate, and then it's got to be on record and licensed and such with this group, this USATF and the Runner of the Year. What's interesting is the Runner of the Year takes results from any race as long as it has that USATF certification. Mm-hmm. So even though the USATF has a quote circuit race of these various distances, those aren't the only races where you can gain points at a distance, as long as the race itself has gone through the process of being certified and course eligible. Then you can get points running it. Now, it's in your best interest as a runner to be at the races that have the most amount of competitors.
Yep.
Whether you're 80 or you're 60, male, female, doesn't matter. You want to be at the big races because that's where the competition's at.
Yep.
And that's how you score.
The rank points ranking.
Sure. So that's how you score the points.
Okay.
Let's just say you're 30 years old and you need to run a 15:30 for a 5K to qualify to even gain a point. It's in your best interest to go to a race, a 5K, that will get 10 men runners, since, you know, if you're a male, and have all 10 runners go under 15:30. Mm-hmm. And then it's in your best interest to beat all 10 runners.
Yeah.
And that will give you 10 points. So if 9 runners run 15:15 to 15:30, and you're the 10th runner at 15:30, then you're going to get 1 point.
Yeah. But if you run 18, then zero.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you're, yeah, let's lighten up this time standard. Let's say the time standard was 18 minutes.
Yeah.
And 40 men run under 17 minutes. Just because you run 17:30, you're not getting any points. You have to be in the top 10.
Oh, okay.
Of each, yeah, of each distance. And,
10's the
and
max.
The 10th fastest time.
10's the max points at any given
yeah,
race.
So, and okay, they score five of those distances from a mile to a marathon. So you don't have to run them all.
Uh-huh.
You just, it's in your best interest to run
the more
five
run
distances,
yeah,
five,
strategic,
and get mm-hmm 10 points in all. So right, your best points yeah for the year would be 50. If you score uh-huh 50 points, yeah, no one's beating you.
Yeah.
To best my knowledge, I don't think you two people could score 50.
Probably
unless,
not.
Unless
there's
one,
not enough races unless they tied. Or, yeah. I don't think. Yeah, probably not.
So I tied, yeah, I believe,
yeah,
in 2016.
Yep.
I
forgot to say coin flip or what's the tiebreaker
with Dan Strike? No, they just let it be a tie.
Yeah. Daniel Strike.
It's yep, it's one of those things where I don't know. At that point in the year, you kind of run out of, well, you run out of races, and then if you're tired, you you run out of the ability to go chase the times.
Yeah.
So I that year, I believe it had been tied for quite a while, and I quite honestly I either got banged up or I just wasn't able to go race.
Yeah.
And even this year, for 2019,
uh-huh,
I was sitting in second place for the whole entire year. And the one race that would have put me over the top would have been a mile road race.
Okay.
And I just never went and ran a mile race. And then there was a
out there anyhow.
Yeah, there aren't that many. And then the couple that were around, I was banged up, so I didn't go do it. Yeah. And that's what kept me from getting the title this year. But there was another gentleman that ran extremely well at Twin Cities Marathon, and he bumped me from second then to third because he had a killer marathon and scored a bunch of points. So it's really fun, you know, if it's your thing, you know, it's kind of neat to keep an eye on the distances. It gives you something to do.
Clearly your thing.
Yeah, man, it's fun. It's 5-year age groups,
mm-hmm,
and so I'm entering a new age group this spring.
Yep.
And so I'm going to have a later part of the season where I'm going to be focusing. So May through December will be where I focus. I won't be able to run any. Well, I will run them, but the age group I want to score in, I won't be scoring until after.
Right.
After me.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
For me. Yeah. Have you always been chasing runner of the year? I mean, since 93 or back when? Or I mean, do you feel like year after year after year, this is kind of your main focus? Like you're saying to yourself, Greg, how can I, you know, sign up for plan my schedule, plan my training, because I want to be on top of that, you know, runner of the year?
You know, it goes in ebbs and flows. And I, what I'm seeing here with the way Tony listed it, it looks like it's like every 5 years.
Right.
And I think that matches with either
being on the low end of the age group.
Yeah. The low end of an age group. And it does give you a little bit of energy to go to some of the races. My goal every year is to run a new race, something I haven't done before.
In terms of just the event or the distance or
the event.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's, you know, the runner of the year is fun. Like I say, it's a small group of geeks, running geeks that really, really care about it. And it is fun. And if you go on the site and look historically, the women and the men that have been there consistently over the years and the times that were put down, you know, it's just blows your mind how fast some of these runners have been throughout the years. But my goal is, like I say, to try to find even locally, you know, there's so many nice races that are local, you know, that just, I try to go out and do. I just, before I came here, something came across my phone and there's a half marathon in Ironwood, Michigan in September. They call it running over the bridge or something, but I may go do that. You
right.
know?
Yeah.
Haven't done that before. So
what was your,
close.
What was your new race in 2019?
Oh, yeah. Good question. What did I do? Let's see, 2019.
Or like, do you have this like this is my new one. Yeah, put it on the counter. Yeah.
No, I don't. It just kind of pops in.
Yeah.
I may have missed my goal. Doesn't come to my head here real quick, so I may have missed my goal.
Sorry to expose you.
Yeah, no doubt. The year before was Paavo Nurmi Marathon, so that was a blast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, runner of the year, these are mostly road runs, and you would probably call yourself a road specialist.
Certainly.
And do you have a favorite distance or one that you think, first of all, like favorite that you like to run or race best, but also do you have a distance that you think you're best at or that you're like naturally suited for more so?
Yeah. You know, that kind of a into that question, I got into running by cross country and I spent a lot of time in the woods on trails because that's where we trained. Yeah. Where our college was, it was a lot like Duluth.
Mm-hmm.
And think of like a Lester Park ski trails. And this is pre mountain bike trail
single
era. There's no single track stuff. So it was a gigantic just forest full of hardwoods and pines and just like Lester. Mm-hmm. We did 80% of our training there. So I kind of early in my career was very attracted to running because of the trails in the woods and just the quietness and, you know, the leaves cracking under your shoes.
Fresh
when you
air.
Run. Yeah. So it's surprising I ended up being more of a road racer than like trails, especially in this day and age with the vast trail system.
Mm-hmm.
Duluth has, but a lot of areas have. You know, the Keweenaw in Michigan has. And
a lot of trail races, too.
Yeah, lots of trail races. And to be honest, I did give myself a season where I did try to ramp up, and I did the Porcupine Mountain Marathon trail run. I don't know. I probably was 40. That was probably 2011-ish, somewhere in that range, 2012. And it actually went very, very well. It's probably one of my best marathons. And as far as how I felt and fueled for the whole, you know, the whole distance.
Mm-hmm.
But I quickly would feel a lot of back issues, a lot of hip flexor issues, you know, probably from weaknesses that are being exposed with the ups, you know, picking your feet over roots and rocks and the steep, steep climbs. And I just got sick of dealing with it.
Yeah.
And I don't get as much of that from road racing. I struggle still with back issues and back pain, but I think that's just years. That's just years of what it is.
Right.
So since I am on the roads, I think my body is tuned in for the half marathon and 10-mile distance.
Yeah.
I've lined up for 23 marathons. I've finished 19 of them, and I feel I have yet to eat. When you watch a marathon or talk to other runners, I don't feel like I've hit that marathon where it's like, that was amazing. I didn't even feel like I was running.
You're right.
It just unfolded perfectly. You know, it was like, those stories, like it was his day. I have yet to have that feeling. Every single one of them has been a struggle. I've struggled from 4 miles, you know, at 24, 23 to the finish where you're really reeling and rigging hard going, I don't want to fall off. How much will I not fall off?
Right.
So when I see runners when I read splits and I see these people that are negative splitting or, hey, let's even split a race.
Mm-hmm.
And then picking it up the last 8K and they're dropping negative splits and sprinting into the finish with their arms up and this.
Mm-hmm.
It's just foreign to me. It just doesn't even seem like a possibility.
I think that's normal, though. I think the negative split is a major outlier.
It's got to be. It just doesn't work for me. Whereas in the half marathon, I've been that person where I've started at a you know, 2-3 miles and it's going good, and next thing you know you're at 9, next thing you know you're crossing the line, you're like, wow, did that just happen? And I totally understand it's half the distance, but the times that I've ran in a half marathon distance, 10-mile distance, and if you get out the calculators and you get out the charts and runner A should be able to do this based on this time, I am nowhere near those. Yeah. And so I've just chalked it up, you know, metabolically or something. My body just might not be a marathoner. You know, there's 1500 meters runners out there, and there's 50 mile runners out there, and everywhere in between. And I think I've wrapped my head around it enough and tried different techniques. I've tried overtraining, like, I don't mean overtraining, I mean like over distance training.
Oh,
so,
sure, sure, sure.
So I've done like 28-mile runs, you know, and I've ran the course like three times, and, you know, a handful of 24-milers, I get the same results. And I've gone the other way, where I've ran nothing longer than 20 or 21 and just loaded up with 18-milers, and I've got the same result. And, you know, everywhere in between. One thing I haven't done is I haven't run high mileage. I've never ran 100-mile a week in my life.
Yeah.
Wow.
My highest mileage week has been 94 miles.
See, what would you say you've averaged for your marathon builds? Where would be, it's tough to...
Historically, I bet you I'm always in that 70 to 75-mile range.
So we had that conversation last podcast. I don't know if you listened to that yet, Greg, or not, with Harry Cottrell and Jaro. And Harry was talking, he didn't really, what did he say, 65 was kind of like his typical
max?
I'm
a really low mileage runner, 65. Like, Harry, that's kind of a lot of miles for a lot of people.
Right.
Oh, certainly.
High and low is certainly subjective to the individual, but overall with the grand scheme of marathon training, I would say 65 is low, even though maybe people nowadays might think it to be pretty high.
Especially
up there,
at that level when, you know, guys are under 245 and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's just fascinating to me what works for different people, different things, and that all works. Yeah. So
that seems to be a theme on the podcast too, and so I think that's a good segue, Greg. It's kind of, what's your training methodology in general? I mean, obviously, like you said, having done a 100-mile week, some people's, you know, strategy is just high mileage, 120 miles a week by any means necessary. Do you have a certain, I mean, obviously you've been running at a high level for a long, long, long time. You know, what do you think works best for you?
You know, I've read Arthur Lydiard's book, and man, I wanted to do that. I wanted to just wrap out those 100-mile weeks, week in, week out, week in, week out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, you'd get halfway through the week and go, evening run, let's, you know, go do that 6-mile evening run or whatever that was. I'd just say no and just stay in my house, you know. So
mental versus
body? Probably exactly
more so.
Yeah. And so, you know, as much as I respect a lot of his training methods, and think of the era when he was coming up with this stuff, you know. He's one of them that I've followed, and then you know, kind of fast forwarding, Joe Vigil has been a coach. I've read his book and kind of follow his way. Greg McMillan, who had a group, and probably still, he does a lot of coaching online, but he had a group in Arizona and Flagstaff, who Greg got a lot of his training. I shouldn't speak for him, but he was involved with that FILA Discovery program in the early 2000s, and it was. Coach Canova's coming to my mind, but it wasn't him. It was Gabriella Rosa, who was having Greg kind of run the program,
the local,
in San Diego,
local,
the USA, Discovery USA program.
Yep.
And so Greg has been a coach I've read, and actually I had him coach me for a couple of years just online. He wrote me a couple plans, and actually those are my best marathons, or the programs that he wrote out for me.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I had a couple others that, you know, oh, how can I forget? Jack Daniels.
Yep.
Yeah. I've got his book
Fitzinger.
And has followed his way. Pete Fitzinger, his book.
Yep.
So those are the programs that I've followed.
Seen a lot of different.
And just kind of make it work for myself. You know, I work, like most people, I work full time, so 40 hours a week. I'm very fortunate in my career. I work in a health science career. I have my weekends free, which is kind of unusual for health science people. Mm-hmm. So I consistently at least have my weekends free where I can count on that long run and then, you know, recovery run the next day. And so I try to do, as I've become older, I can't do two workouts a week and a long run.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the number one thing I've had to try to get my body to adjust to, is more rest or more recovery.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just say I do a long run on Saturday, and especially if it's a long run for a marathon. So my long runs for marathons, you know, 22 miles.
Yeah.
And if I do something within that workout where I'm varying the paces, my Sunday is a very slow half hour run. I try not to take a zero, like a day away from running after a long run,
right?
Because I do think the movement is necessary mm-hmm. for flushing out lactic acid and just moving things slightly. It doesn't have to be much,
right?
But 4 or 5 mile jog, maybe just leave the watch at home,
right?
And just really keep it conversational. Point A, point B, come home and be done.
Yeah.
Monday, so 2 days after the long run, is often worse.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it's another shakeout style run, but I do try to squeak a couple more miles in just to get the volume. Mm-hmm. I run once a day. I can't do twice a day to get my whatever X, whatever the volume at the end of the week is, my, let's just say 70 miles. So that's all on single day runs. And so then I try to do, if so that's 2 days post. So Tuesday is a kind of a judgment day, and mm-hmm. that is the day I try to do like a workout type day mm-hmm. built within a medium distance run. Wednesday is recovery again. Thursday is kind of what do we do? And then Friday would be try to do another workout. Well, as you can see by doing the math throughout the week, you're going to miss recovery somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I chopped a workout midweek, and now I just... to make it easy, I would do it on Wednesday and then my long run on Sunday yeah. or Saturday. So I'm really only getting two harder type runs.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can spice up one of my shorter ones once in a while, I do.
Strides,
I try to do strides yeah, yeah. 3 to 4 days a week.
Hmm.
Those are just money in the bank. They, yeah. they throughout the year, not, you know.
Post-run for time. Your strides, before run, just on its, on its own?
Sometimes I'll actually do a mid-run.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'd say a high percentage of them are right towards the end. At the end.
Yeah.
Of course, speed up. I mean, is there any like 30 seconds or
Landmarks. Landmarks work. Like see a telephone yeah. pole or see a sign up ahead and just guess, oh, that's got to be close to 100 meters.
Mm-hmm. People say strides, but then I always kind of wonder how scientific are you mm-hmm. with your strides. I mean, do you do 15 or you just do, do a couple, handful, whatever. You know, how scientifical, mm-hmm. for lack of a better term, yeah. are you with those? You know,
half a dozen.
Yeah.
I try to aim for five or six, and it's not 100%. It's not a sprint. So it's not like lining up at the track and doing a 100-meter sprint.
Mm-hmm.
My coach in college always said, run them over-exaggerated. So you're – and I don't – necessarily do that anymore. I don't know if he knew what he was talking about, but he had us really long, like long stride and long, a lot of
tall,
really arms,
tall,
yeah, like uh-huh. really over exaggerating your arm swing and such. Huh. I maintain my same form that I would in a, like just say half marathon
the distance form,
and then
right. yeah,
and then gosh, I don't know, 85% effort, 90% effort at best,
right.
maybe.
Yeah,
yeah.
So it's not an all out. It's something you want to be able to do. And work yourself up to doing a half a dozen of them.
Sure.
And yep. and just more than anything, it's really focusing on hip movement and proper spine and arm swing and getting your legs to come through and firing the glutes. And it, when you really start concentrating on each muscle group that way, it's amazing how sometimes your body, your mind can get lazy and not fire some of those muscles.
Right.
So that's what I use my strides for and like right now in this time of the year, I'm only doing like 2 or 3.
Yeah.
And each week I'll add 1 or 2, just depending how I feel. But I try to do that. So then a month from now, I'll be getting my half dozens or so.
Sure.
For like strides and drills, especially kind of pre-workout, a lot of times when I'm coaching some of my training group people specifically, I'll use the analogy of when say like a piano player is going to play, they'll maybe warm up with scales. Just kind of get the rhythm of the fingers kind of moving with the keys a little bit and just kind of get that whole scale thing down before they begin playing their piece. And that's kind of how I sometimes see the strides and the drills. It's kind of getting the body, the neuromuscular system kind of in tune. Like this is the movement, that kind of pure form that we're looking for. So when we do these, I don't know, 800 meter repeats or whatever it is, you're going to be able to do those with the proper form and proper feel. I think that's, to me, that's what strides and drills are all about.
I never remember to do those more often.
I like something you said a little bit ago, Greg, about on Tuesday, like your judgment day. You decide kind of what you're, how you're feeling, maybe. Is that how you refer to it as?
So is that a sign of aging?
Right, exactly. Well, yeah.
Because what did we do in college, right? It's like Tuesday you showed up at the track and you did it. It's like, well, I don't feel like it today.
Right.
And then we had a young coach. He was learning his ways and you know, he got us to nationals, so he did something right. But he was learning too. He was a young coach, but that's how it was. He's just like, you did your Tuesday track workout.
Tuesday's
you did
track
your
day.
Thursday track workout.
Yeah.
And it's like, but you're also 20 years old, so things were
a little bit
more loose. But yeah, so my judgment day is, do you go forward with what, quote, is on paper?
Yes.
Or do you hold back and go, you know, no, this isn't going to work. You need another day of rest or what have you.
Yep.
Now, I'll be honest, almost every time I'm ready by that third day.
Yeah.
It very rarely has given me problems.
Yep.
So I'd say after I turned 40, I really started doing the two full rest days mm-hmm. after a hard workout, whether it was a long run or a track workout.
I'm still jogging.
I fought it for a while. I run, but I don't do a workout. Mm-hmm. And I used to really hate that because I wanted that two hard workouts midweek, a hard workout on the weekend. And
yep.
You know, it brings results, but if you're hurt all the time, that doesn't work either, which I still battle with. So
yeah.
I'm okay with the one decent one in the midweek, and if I can squeak in maybe less volume
mm-hmm.
or shorter workout, and then my long runs are workouts.
Yes,
so,
they absolutely
you know,
are.
Across the board, a lot of people don't understand that
yeah.
They're going to put on their shoes and then don't get me wrong. There's a time in the year when that's exactly what you do. You put your shoes on and you just go get the time in, whether it's 2 hours or an hour 30 or whatever. But once you're into week 8 of your 12 week or 16 week marathon buildup, half marathon buildup, you can't, the general person that works 40 hours a week, my opinion, you can't afford not to make your long run a workout.
Yeah.
Because if you've got a goal, now if you've got a goal of just finishing a race, that's perfect.
Yeah.
You get your time in, get your distance in, and you're going to do just fine. But if you've set yourself a goal, I want to break 2 hours for the half marathon,
mm-hmm.
and you're at, you know, 2:05 or a 2:10,
yeah,
you gotta do a little bit of extra work with that long run.
Mm-hmm.
To help,
which
you
is
know?
Be like practicing a negative split for that specific run, just a fast finish of the last third, pushing the pace
absolutely.
A little bit, that kind of a deal.
I think it's just too valuable our time on the weekends. If you've
mm-hmm.
got two runs, you got a Saturday run, you know, medium run, long run, and then a Sunday recovery run, you got to make one of them count.
Yeah, right. Yep. And you don't have to do that necessarily. Let's see what you'd say, but I'd say you wouldn't have to do that every weekend.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
Every other, every once a month maybe, mm-hmm. but you have to practice it for
yep.
sure.
It just depends on what you're going to do and how hard it is. If
yeah,
it's a
sure.
hard long run, then by all means, you might not do it for two more weekends.
Right, because it's going to take a lot out of you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to train in between all that anyway.
My last kind of training question is, I mean, you race from 1 mile to a marathon in any given season, Greg. Like, how is your training? Where do you stand on kind of the specificity of your buildup? Do you just try and get in general fitness, or are you thinking, you know, what's the next race? Where am I at? Here's my training program.
You know, that's the challenge of that Minnesota runner schedule and the, you know, runner of the year schedule, is it is various distances.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think each of us have a race on the calendar that they want to do their best at, and so that's what I do.
The A race.
And so for 2020, if I'm so lucky, my A race will be the Gary Bjorklund half marathon. That's, I've raced half marathons throughout the country, and I might be biased, but man, I heard it down in Atlanta, believe it or not. So yep. Anybody from Grandma's Marathon that might be listening, kudos to you. Several high level elites mm-hmm. put Grandma's Marathon, and I heard a lot of the Gary Bjorklund talk, best race in the country. So
yeah, cool.
Keep up the good work. Cool. Let's keep it on the map, because it is. It's an amazing race. So that's my A race, and so then everything else just kind of falls where it may be. I ran my fastest mile ever building for Grandma's marathon full. So I was not mile training whatsoever. All I was doing were those striders we were talking about. And in my Tuesday speed session, that would vary from week to week, and in my long run. And I found myself at the starting line of a mile going, what am I doing here? But got to score some points. So I figured,
let it rip.
Let's let it rip. And it really is. It's, you don't ever back off, and you get to the finish line, and it is what it is. So, I have my A race, and then everything else just falls in. So there's some of those times where you go to a 5K or 10K and go, darn, I could be X amount faster if I only would have done 5K type training. Or, you know, it's the same thing with ultras or any distance. You know, when you go to something that you're not really focused on, you know there's a possibility you could have done better if you had a different training buildup. But I just try to keep overall fitness, and I try to do a long, medium long run or long run every weekend. And then my workout that I'm talking about midweek would just vary based on what I want to do. So building up to the Bjorklund, it's going to be more long distance type workouts and threshold. And then I'll pepper in at the end of that a few 800s. I believe in kind of stepping back, that one of the more recent coaches who I've been following is Tom Schwartz, who is also known as Tin Man, if anyone follows the Let's Run message boards. But Tom Schwartz is heading up the Tin Man Elite out of Boulder, Colorado, and he is a firm believer in stressing all the systems with the workouts. Now your workout might have a primary goal, but you also stress some of the other energy systems throughout the workout. So I've been doing that, and I think it keeps your foot in the door for a little bit of foot speed
and
your
race,
you know,
distance.
For a 5K if you need to, or and then, you know, whatever else you're doing for distance.
Cool. Anything else, Tony? I think that, well, we've gone on beyond an hour, so.
Are you kidding me?
Talk about this for hours.
I know, exactly. These things always is the same way. Like, we can just keep on going because it's so much fun. Just, that's why we started the podcast in the first place, just to talk about running. And it's nice to have just local folks chatting away about
it. We did cover a lot, though.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, for sure.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. It was fun.
Cool. We'll see you out there on the roads and the trails.
Absolutely. See everybody out there.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, and that wraps up episode number 17 of the Duluth Rundown podcast. Our thanks to Greg for joining us for the interview section. Super fun to hear some of his stories and some of his thoughts on training. That guy's been at it for a long time, and you know, kind of one of the better local racers for the last, you know, I've known him for, I don't know, 10, 15 years, and he's always way up there in results. It's pretty cool to hear from him. Mike, thanks for...
I think that's about it, huh? So,
yeah.
All right, see you next time.
Next time.